This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Later in the show, we'll have a look at local food trends as restaurants are nailing down their final drafts of menu changes. We'll also hear about exciting new restaurants slated to open in the area with two local food and wine writers. But first, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security announced in November that the temporary protected status designation of nearly 50,000 Haitians living in the U.S. would expire in 18 months. TPS was extended to Haitians following the devastating earthquake in 2010 that killed hundreds of thousands of people. An estimated 10,000 Haitians with TPS are living here in Southwest Florida. Plus, the Trump administration in September announced an end to the Obama-era DACA program, that's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which has protected nearly 800,000 young undocumented immigrants from deportation who were brought to the U.S. as children. These policy decisions have led to concern and uncertainty about the future for hundreds of thousands within the country's immigrant communities, many of whom have found work in the healthcare industry. In response, Lee Health held its first ever forum last Saturday for local TPS and DACA recipients to hear from attorneys and immigration experts. In light of that forum, today we're exploring how an end to DACA and the looming expiration of TPS designation for Haitians will impact immigrants and employers like Lee Health, as well as possible legal options for those who could face deportation. Joining me now is Lee Health's Director for Diversity and Patient Care Civil Rights, Yemisi Olorantula-Coates. Given that Lee Health sees some 1.5 million patient visits each year, including patients from all over the world who speak at least 100 different languages, one can imagine that Yemisi's role comes with a great deal of responsibility. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you so much.
We're also joined in studio by Lee Health medical translator Gene Phillip. He came to Southwest Florida in 2010 following that devastating earthquake in Haiti and is among the tens of thousands of Haitians under TPS facing the looming threat of deportation. Thanks so much for joining us and sharing your story and perspective with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us by phone is Fort Myers attorney Indira DeMine. Her local law firm focuses on immigration law. Indira, thanks so much for your time today as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Yemisi, I wanted to begin with you. First of all, tell us about your role and responsibilities with Lee Health. The last time we had you on the show a number of years ago, you had a bit of a different title. I imagine the title you have now, your responsibilities have expanded a bit.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. I recently got promoted to System Director of Diversity and Patient Care Civil Rights. And basically, it focuses on what we call the 4C model. 4C stand for the following. One, caring people. That is our employees, pipeline. Opportunities, mentoring, other aspects as it relates to development. Then there's community engagement, which that's when you had me on a few years ago related to some of the activities that I do within the community. Third is patient care, huge component, not just with language, but religion, with culture, right, with perceptions, bias, implicit or, you know, explicit, all of that. And also, which centers around health equity. And then lastly, corporate social responsibility, which is philanthropy and workforce development and things of that such. So those pretty much, that's the new model related to our department.
And did you or perhaps those within your department come up with the idea of holding this forum last Saturday at Lee Memorial Hospital?
Well, I have to credit meeting Indira DeMine. A couple of months ago, we're both part of a women's group. And I had the opportunity of meeting her, and she did a wonderful presentation related to TPS. In the same token, I learned that my employee, Jean, who you'll hear from, was also on TPS. And right. So between that and other, at the time, our former CEO, Jim Nathan, as well. So this conversation has been going on for the past year. And so what we did in August was hold a immigration workshop for leaders, because I was getting calls from leaders. I have an employee on TPS. What do I do? How do I help them?
Yeah.
So Indira DeMine, Beatrice Jacquet, who's the president of the Haitian Democratic Club.
We know her well here.
Yes. Yeah. And we had another person from the Amigo Center, another attorney. they held a workshop to pretty much educate the leaders so they can help their employees.
Right.
And then I said to Indira, you know, I want to take this a step further. As a system, we want to take this a step further. So we've had dialogues and discussions within Lee Health amongst HR and legal services. So this is not just on me. It was a concerted effort. And that's when Indira said, I know you are interested with this. There is American organization based in Miami called Americans for Immigrant Justice. They travel around the state of Florida. They can come and do the immigration clinic for you at Lee. And that's how we started.
Excellent, excellent. Was this open to the broader community or was this just for staff?
Absolutely. We are a community hospital, as you know. We're not for profit. Mm-hmm. And so we care about our employees, but our employees is an extension of the general community. So yes, it was for our employees, but it was also for the community at large.
Is there a way we can quantify what kind of an impact, these recent policy decisions we've heard from Washington regarding, you know, looming ends for TPS and DACA would impact Lee Health? I mean, do you track even how many employees within the health system? I mean, I think there's between 12 and 13,000 employees. I don't know if that's something that you actually keep track of.
Yes, there is about we have about 15,000 employees plus.
Oh, excuse me. Excuse me.
We've been growing.
Yes.
from a way of we cannot go into employee files from a labor law perspective. However, I track the amount of conversation or connection, whether it's a leader contacting me, telling me about an employee, or an employee that has come to me individually. And so the impact is on multiple levels. A lot – what I found is that it's diverse positions within the system. So there's some of them are nurses. Some of them are interpreters like Jean. Some of them work in food service. I mean, they're very –
It runs the gamut.
It runs the gamut. Mm. So that's been interesting to see the diversity in terms of the positions they held. But also what is striking is that a lot of them have been with the system for a long time. And this is not just Haitian. We also have recently I had an employee from Nicaragua and their TPS is looming as well. So it's just been interesting to see how long a lot of the people have been with the system, the contribution and their involvement within the system and in the community. That has been striking. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of them have families that are born in the U.S. So, you know, we're talking about from a societal standpoint in terms of family, economic, it's multi-layered.
Right. Jean, I wanted to bring you into the conversation at this point, and maybe you can tell us a bit about your story. I understand that you came to the Fort Myers region in 2010 after the earthquake. How old were you at that time?
I was 17. As you may have known, I came right after the earthquake, which occurred in our country in 2010. Yeah. And when I came in, it was a life-changing experience for me because I did not know the language. It was a new culture I needed to attune myself into. And the church, every interaction I would have. So it was really a life-changing experience for me also in my education, the thing I have to adjust myself to. And the most important thing I realized is when I came into the United States, I knew the very first day this is the land of opportunity. And as a young folks, I want to pursue my education. I see my life here, and I see that my dream, my future is really, really bright. So that's the reason I want to take all the advantage I have and to get all the goals accomplished.
Did you come here with family?
Yes, I did come with my family at the time. Especially my two sisters were in our family. We have what we call mixed status. That means my younger sister, she's an American citizen. So we came with her, and my older sister was a victim of the earthquake. Mm-hmm. She was the only one surviving that during the earthquake. So we came with her, and she had to go on the surgery. Long story short, when we came in, we stayed for a few months thinking that we'll be able to have our way back. But when realizing the damage and the condition of our country after the aftermath, so we have to make that decisions to stay here. Not like we were sorry about it, but because it was the best decision to make. And still today, we never regret it.
Right. And how did you get connected with Lee Health?
It was really interesting. After I graduated from high school, I had to make the decisions if I could, you know, if I wanted to pursue college, which always been my dream. So because of my legal status, I had a limited financial aid, which is even the course, I had to pay an extra money for it because I was considered as a out-of-state student. Uh-huh. So I decided to use the time to volunteer myself, since finding a job was really challenging for me. So I volunteered at Lee Memorial Health System in 2012 as an ambassador. And that also helped me communicate and interacting with people over there. And after 6 months, they had an opportunity to apply for Girl Services Representative. And then I find my way there and from Girl Services Representative positions, and I was hired as an interpreter.
All right. I wanted to go back to something you had said before, because I know that for U.S. citizens, you basically just have to establish a year of residency within Florida in order to be eligible for in-state tuition rates, which are dramatically lower than out-of-state tuition rates. As a TPS holder, that's not something that was available to you?
No, it was not. And it was not something I just tried to ask someone or college tuition once. I've been really consistent still today after 7 years, been going to all the legal channels that I was aware of and to see what kind of help they can offer for people who are under the status. And it was really, it has been really hard to find the help, because we know people who are outside of state student, you have to pay an extra money, and the money was really exorbitant.
And obviously, it goes without saying that the pending expiration of TPS for Haitians here, it's got to weigh heavily on your mind all the time. I mean, what can you tell us about your situation? Is there any sort of pathway for you to stay in the U.S.?
When I analyze and ponder on the issue, first of all, you know, when you have a dream, there will always be obstacles that come your way. And instead of seeing them as a problem, you should see them as an opportunity to just strike back harder, because the ceiling might be, you know, above your head, but it's not a reason. It's not something you should consider to not stop doing anything. So what I've considered is to see, as I'm waiting right now on the new a report that the government will give regarding the TPS, though we have 18 months ahead of us. But the things I'm doing right now is to see if I could find a college online classes with, tuitions, and also with a price that I can afford, which I could continue to pursue it. It's kind of a slow step, but it's much better slowly and assuredly I'll be able to attend where I need to go.
And just sort of anecdotally, among members of the Haitian community here in Southwest Florida, I mean, do you hear from folks who are sort of planning for having to return to Haiti, or who would maybe go to another country instead of going back? I mean, are these kind of conversations that you hear all the time?
Yes. Actually, I have a close family that I know for several years. Not so long ago, they have made decisions to leave the country because the family was having a lot of stress. And knowing, have that in your mind that the next 6 months or the next few years, or you might be deported. And that created a lot of social. They have made the decisions to leave the country because of the fear of the unknown. Right. And that was really drastic when I hear that.
Right. Well, again, with the pending expiration of TPS status for Haitians here in the U.S. following the 2010 earthquake and the Trump administration's recent announcement that DACA would be ending as well, we're following up on a forum held last Saturday that was hosted by Lee Health and kind of looking at the local impacts there. And I do invite listeners to join the conversation. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Indira DeMine, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Can you just maybe introduce yourself a bit and tell us about the law practice you have here in Fort Myers? Who are your clients primarily?
Sure, yes. So I'm Indira DeMine. I practice exclusively in immigration. I'm a solo practitioner in downtown Fort Myers. I actually graduated at Ave Maria Law School and decided to stay in Florida, so this is a little bit over 5 years of exclusively doing immigration law. I have quite a large portion of my practice are Haitian immigrants. It runs the gamut. I do all types of immigration. So the removal defense part for people that are in deportation proceedings, family petitions for people trying to get their family here or their family is here and they're trying to get their paperwork situated. I also do the investor visas. So for a foreign national that's coming to invest in Southwest Florida, I can help them file for an investor visa. So while my practice is exclusively on immigration, there's so many different areas of immigration in of itself that I'm kept pretty busy.
Yeah, I imagine. Were you one of the speakers at last Saturday's forum at Lee Memorial Hospital?
Yeah, I was one of the volunteer attorneys, yes.
Excellent. I was hoping that we could explore a bit, you know, some of the possible pathways for Haitians living here under TPS to potentially remain in the country.
Right.
By and large, are most of the nearly 50,000 Haitians here in the U.S. under TPS, do they not have options?
So that's the thing. Most likely, if they're on TPS and they're not applying for something else, most likely there's not something else they could apply for. And that's there's so many misconceptions surrounding immigration law. I think I hear this all the time. You know, with the news. You know, why aren't people waiting in line? Why aren't people filing their proper paperwork?
Yes, I've been looking for this line. Where is it?
I'm trying to find it. The line. So why aren't people filing their paperwork before they come to the United States so they can get here legally? The hard truth is that there isn't a line, there isn't any paperwork they can file. You know, there's three main ways you can come to the United States legally. You know, through a family petition, so I have a mom, dad, or a brother or sister in the United States that's going to petition for me. Through an investor visa, so I'm coming with $50,000 to invest in the U.S. economy. Through a work visa, so I have a specialized skill and I'm coming to the United States to use my specialized skills. And then there are temporary visas, for example, a student visa, temporary work visas and things like that. But for a person, Joe Schmo, he's in his 30s, he has a couple of kids, no ties to the United States, but he's a good person and hardworking person, no criminal history. He doesn't have $50,000 to invest in the U.S. economy. For a person like that, there isn't a pathway, right? So for a person like that, they make the decision, do I remain in my home country, a third world country, or do I, trek over the Rio Grande, or do I take that risk? And that's one thing I hope folks understand, that it's not a decision between waiting for proper paperwork versus coming here illegally. Right. It's the decision between keep living my current life in a third world country or seek a better life in the United States, right? So unfortunately, a lot of people that are on TPS, they're on TPS because that is their only option. And folks are pretty diligent about, seeking out legal advice. Now, in my line of work, there's a lot of notarial fraud and a lot of unlawful practice of law. So there is a lot of misinformation out there in the immigrant community. But for the most part, people are seeking help. They're seeking advice, legal advice. But the hard truth is there isn't a pathway a lot of times.
Right. I wanted to get into this whole, the idea of the family-based green card. I know,
right.
Certain conditions would have to be met in order for someone to be eligible for that. And one of those would be if you were here under TPS and you had an adult child who was a U.S. citizen, then they could petition for your green card under certain conditions. But what about those who came here under TPS, say, 7 or so years ago? They've since had children who are now U.S. citizens. What happens to those families?
So this idea of the anchor baby, you have a U.S. citizen child and,
yeah.
you know, you're allowed to stay in the United States is simply untrue. A child is not allowed to petition for a parent until that child is at least 21 years old, and they can file a petition at that point. There's a wait period, so it's not like I filed a petition, next year it's approved. It gets approved, but there's a wait period for, you know, several years before you can move forward with that petition. So for those family that you described, came here, had children here, if they've had children within the last 7 years, in those cases, if TPS is taken away in 18 months, you know, they have the difficult decision of deciding, do I return to Haiti with my child, who's a U.S. citizen? Do I leave the child in the care of a U.S. citizen family member here? You know, and it's not an easy decision either way. Or do I wait until the government realizes I'm here without status and then, you know, get an order of deportation? So it's a difficult time for the Haitian community.
Right. Well, I wanted to go to the phones now and take a call from Nina in Punta Gorda. Nina, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is, you know, regarding the TPS patients, and why would they not want to go home and help their country recover? Because now they've gotten some education or whatever. I would think that they would be valuable citizens back home.
Indira, maybe I can have you jump on this, and maybe
sure,
Jean
absolutely.
As well. Yeah.
When we think of a country, we think of, and you know, I grew up in a foreign country, so I grew up in South America, so I kind of understand this a little bit more. But when we think of a country, we think of basic infrastructure, you know, running water, electricity, roads, protection, a police force. Those things are not there in Haiti. I'll just share an anecdote with you. A Haitian client who was, had a small business. And the reason what brought him here to the United States was every other day he was being robbed and losing his merchandise because and he'd go to the cops and there's no police force, there's corruption, there's no basic infrastructure to get anything going. You know, there isn't those basic necessity that we think about when we think of, you know, a country that can hold up on its own. So asking, you know, a family or with children or even a single person to return to a country like that where the future is very grim, you know, it's difficult. It's quite a difficult decision to make, and I completely understand it because if the structure was there, a governing structure was there, and there's something you can build upon, I get it. But the basic infrastructure isn't there in Haiti.
Right, and I would like to add before Jean adds, yes. I know recently there was a travel advisory within the United States telling U.S. citizens to be careful about traveling to Haiti. So everything that Indira is stating is accurate in terms of the infrastructure and things that are not in place. And so if there's a travel advisory that is presently being instated for us, for U.S. citizens to be careful in going back, imagine those that are going back after they've been gone for 7, 10 years now from their homes. And having children that are born and raised here, this is the country that they know. So while I do understand what the caller is saying, is a lot more complex. Just like Indira is, I'm also from a foreign family as well. And so it's a lot more complex and it's about the stability of the nation. And at this stage, it's not completely stable.
Jean, what about you? If you were to have to go back to Haiti when TPS expires, do you have anywhere to go back to?
One thing I will mention related to both Yemisi and Indira said is returning back to my country, I do not consider it as the best option right now because next year, after been living in this country for nearly 8 years, going to school there, you work. You're attuning yourself to a culture, going to a church, and making progress, even planning your dreams, your goals, all your assets, you buying homes and everything. You have your sisters or American citizens. And I think after nearly 8 years, that became your home. and the language, when you encompass all those aspects, and the condition of now of the Haiti is not really the best, because if the country cannot even receive tourists like American, they have mentioned like several months ago that, you know, they are not safe. It's not a safe place to go right now. And I think as a human being, if it's not safe for a category of people, it should not be safe for everyone.
Right. Also, I wanted to mention that the think tank Inter-American Dialogue estimates that Haitians abroad this year alone are sending home some $2 billion to folks who are still in the country. That's nearly equal to Haiti's annual operating budget right now. With the loss of that, what could that mean to the continued recovery in Haiti, the country's economy, and quite frankly, to the U.S. economy, right, if these workers aren't here?
And that's a great, fascinating point you've brought up, because that has been something that I've read, that they've been tracking the amount of money that foreign nationals are bringing back home, which is establishing and helping out their families back there, which down in the long run helps with stability. I know being Nigerian, that has helped Nigeria in particularly.
Right.
So that's one nation that has benefited from that. And you're right, in terms of these are people who've contributed to the community, who are taxpayers, who are bringing their skills. These are nurses. Mm. These are people that are caring for our patients.
Right.
These are people that are feeding our patients. These are people who are forging communication with our patients. These are people that are doing, waking up every day and contributing to the American society. And that is one thing that is great about America, is this diversity that exists in all levels, religion, age, culture, shades, and how every day we wake up and give our best to this nation. And that's the beauty and the fabric of what America is.
Right, right. Well, I wanted to get into the whole issue of a lot of the misconceptions that are out there about immigration, about U.S. immigration policy and immigrants, and how that's fostered a great deal of anti-immigrant sentiment here in the U.S. EMSC, is that something that you even look to address within the workforce of Lee Health?
You know, I must say that there's been some talks related to that, but that's not been a major conversation. Diversity is so huge in terms of the topics and things that we relate to. But the one thing I must say, being at Lee Health for the past 10 years, is that we have the dialogue. We have it.
Right.
Oftentimes, you know, what hurts an organization or hurts the people is when there is silence. We actually have the dialogue. And we believe in Dr. Donna Hicks, who I love. She's a Harvard professor. And she talked about the dignity model. And basically, she says all people desire to be treated and seen in a favorable light.
Right.
When you do that, you ensure their dignity. And so when I'm doing trainings or talking about what that means, oftentimes, yes, there is things that are different with all of us, but there are things that are similar. Sometimes we're so focused on what is different that we don't see the similarities and the connections that lies within us, even if you're another shade than me, or right, even if you have another name than me. But when we focus on the dignity, we can see past that. And one thing that I can say within Lee Health is, you know, if it wasn't a value, I wouldn't be sitting here with you, neither would Gene. We would not exist. So the fact that Lee Health has a department and a program that it looks to address some of these things in a healthy dialogue kind of way, I think that makes an exceptional healthy organization, which I must note that recently we had Forbes designation as the best workplace to work in 2017. And so that says a lot about the amount of work and commitment that Lee Health has for not only its employees, but also the community at large.
Excellent. And just on this topic of misconceptions and anti-immigrant sentiment, I just wanted to read a from a tweet we received earlier in the show. This is from Mary Lou Benjamin. She writes, "No sympathy for those businesses who deliberately choose to hire illegals, in all caps, over Americans. Rest in peace, hashtag DACA, hashtag deport them all. Enforce U.S. immigration laws. Every sovereign country has a right to protect her borders." Before I ask for a response from our listeners, I just want to point out that the term illegals doesn't mean anything. A constitutional law professor who I'd spoken with recently told me that if a person cannot be illegal, that is not an adjective you use to describe a human. If I rob a 7-Eleven, I've done something illegal and I am a criminal, but a person's immigration status is a civil matter and a person cannot be illegal. It is a derogatory term. And it's not the best way to show seriousness of intent if you want to have a substantive debate about the future of U.S. immigration policy. That's all I'll say about that. Yemisi, does Lee Health hire undocumented immigrants?
No, we do not. We could not hire undocumented immigrants. They must have work authorization. Gene has work authorization to work within the country. We do not do that. And so I'm sure Indira can probably elaborate as an attorney, but absolutely not. Everyone within the system is authorized to work within the system.
And dear, I would love to hear more from you about because I'm sure you hear these kind of comments all the time, and they're fear based, but a lot of times they just turn out to not even be true. One being that undocumented immigrants are more likely to be committing crimes than U.S. citizens or natural born citizens.
Yeah, and one of the things I try to do is. And I know there's an emotional aspect to this conversation, but there's also just an economic impact and an economic aspect to it. And I try to draw the conversation towards the economic portion. You know, how is this going to impact us as taxpayers here in Southwest Florida? Let's forget about the fact that, it's in our human nature to want better for our families. And this need and this want of a better life is bringing people here to our borders. Let's take all that away and just focus on the economic impact. Are we actually doing better or hurting ourselves by deporting them all, as this tweet said? And studies have shown, I just read from the one study from the Migration Policy Institute said that losing DACA would result in a loss of $433 billion in U.S. gross domestic product over the next 10 years. Losing TPS for El Salvador, Honduras, and Haiti would cost us taxpayers over $6.9 billion reduction in Social Security and Medicaid contribution over a decade. It would cost us a loss of $45 billion reduction in GDP over a decade. So if we can focus the conversation on just the economic aspect here, as taxpayers, advocating for, deport them all is actually hurting us. It's actually hurting, our Social Security and Medicaid in the long run, because these are contributing folks that are contributing to Medicaid and Social Security for us Americans. One of the questions that I get is, if someone is not allowed to legally work, how are they being able to file taxes? Well, the IRS has figured out that or has said that even though you're not able to legally work, we will take your taxes. We will give you a tax ID number so you can file your tax return, so you can pay taxes. So, an American probably doesn't know this, but even someone that's here undocumented without legal status to work is still filing taxes and is still contributing tax dollars to the U.S. economy. So if we just focus on that alone, it just doesn't make sense, as a rational human being. And, just as a taxpayer, it doesn't make sense. And so that's what I hope that folks get out of this. Just focus on how is it going to impact you in your daily lives if we really spent so much resources on deporting folks who are contributing to our economy.
I also just want to,
owners and hard workers.
Yeah, I mean, and we are, we're way over time at this point. But I just wanted to also point out, Indira, that, many of these folks are paying taxes into, public and social welfare systems that they legally cannot benefit
use,
from.
Right. That's true. That's correct.
So I'm sorry we can't get more into specifics there because we have about run out of time. But thanks so much to our guest today. We've been speaking with Fort Myers immigration attorney Indira DeMine. In studio, we've been talking with Lee Health's Director of Diversity. I'm sorry, Systems Director for Diversity and Patient Care Civil Rights, Yemisi Olorantula-Coates, and Lee Health Medical Translator and Haitian TPS holder, Jean Phillip. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, WGCU's Julie Glenn explores what you can expect this season when you go out to eat, what foods are infiltrating restaurant menus, and what wines are all the rage. That's just ahead. Stay with us. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU.